Resolution carries. It is now 6:02. We are on agenda item number 7 from the Sheriff's Department, a resolution for the WSDOT Kenosha County Pre-Trial Intensive Supervision Program 15 grant.
This resolution is in reference to an award from the Wisconsin Department of Transportation for yet another year for the intensive supervision program that we partner with Wisconsin Correctional Services to manage for us. The period of spending started in July of 2011. So this is an adjustment to 2011 budget. It runs through July, June of 2012. This carried over the unspent balance and material the process of the post 2011. This is for the OWI arrests for those that have a second or more occurrence of that.
This went to the Judiciary Law Committee?
It did last night. Yes, passed unanimously.
It passed with everybody up there. I said a question. You said last night, so that it was correctional. Because here, Wisconsin Community Services.
Yes. I'm sorry. WCS.
By Supervisor Gantz, second by Supervisor Singer. Any discussion?
It's a good program.
On resolution or item number 7, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution carries. It is now 6:04. Let the record reflect that Supervisor Rose and Supervisor Green are in attendance. Resolution item number 8.
You've gone through it. You know that already?
We're almost done.
Sorry to find good.
We want these meetings to be
efficient. Yeah, let me get my coat off.
Okay, from the Sheriff's Department, resolution list that bots traffic enforcement grant 2011 to 2012.
Chairman, members of the committee, these are three grants, three awards we received from the state of Wisconsin. It's presented for judicial and law tonight, totaled about $8,000. And received these. This is a kind of a housekeeping resolution. Looking for authorization because this came late in the year in 2011 where we will apply it because the running time goes through September 12th. So basically, we made some budget adjustments and we want the authorization for this resolution to make sure we carry the money into 2012 and we'll continue the enforcement efforts. The problem is we didn't get the award late in the year. So by that time, our budget was submitted. So now we have to make the adjustments.
So the period of this award is 2011 and 12?
Yes. It goes to September 30th of 2012.
So we have some expenses for 2011 that we can charge for this grant as well?
Yes. And the majority of these grants will be put into effect in 12 because we didn't have much time to do that last year.
Move to approve.
Thank you.
Moved by Supervisor Singer, second by Supervisor Rose, Supervisor Gantz.
Pretty soft dollars.
Those are dollars that the department has that they allow to match, they qualify to match. So expenses that they already have.
Soft match is done by administrative costs and things that
we have. A movement within what you already have.
Is that what I'm saying?
Yeah, what you said.
That's okay. Right. All right. Any other discussion on the resolution? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Okay, and item number 9 is now 6:06. Sheriff Department resolution for the organized crime drug enforcement task force's overtime funds offering.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm here representing this resolution. It is for the organized crime drug enforcement task force. It would allocate $4,000 for my unit to utilize in the assistance of a federal drug investigation. This award would be active beginning October 1st of 2011, and it would proceed until September 30th of 2012. This particular case, it is case specific, and it is in reference to a case that has reached the prosecution stage. It would be to reimburse the overtime that my detectives would have towards testifying or towards any follow-up that would be required by the federal government to prosecute these subjects.
Second. Moved by Supervisor Dan, second by Supervisor Singer. Any other questions? Supervisor Mayor.
To what extent is the KDOG unit involved with this?
We are one of four agencies that have investigated an organization that was operating in southeast Wisconsin. So we make up 25% of the investigation.
The KDOG unit does?
Yes.
I see. Are there, what are the other units that are comparable? Does the city have dogs, or is it just the
This county? Is not dogs. This is my detectives that do drug investigations. So we are not a canine unit. We are called KDOG because of the acronym of the Kenosha Drug Operations.
Oh, I see. That was my question, if this was a canine unit or...
It is not a canine unit. It's a drug unit.
All right. Is canine involved in this at all?
If I need them, I can request them from either department, whether it be the city or the county department.
That's my question, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Any other questions? On the resolution, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution carries.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we are on agenda item number 10 from the Sheriff's Department resolution. This dot I-94 North South Freeway Crime Mitigation Contract for 2011 and 2013 is 609.
Chairman, members of the committee, this is continuation of our patrol efforts on the interstate during the reconstruction between here and Milwaukee. We do a trip for Kenosha County. The state enters into a contract with us, and it's for 11, 12, and 13, that we put a deputy up on the interstate 8 hours a day, working straight time to patrol efforts up there, to assist them if they need it, any of the traffic interdiction as far as accidents and everything else that might go on. And they reimburse us for the salary of that deputy sheriff. Up on the interstate. This is another housekeeping resolution because we got it late and we had to make some budget adjustments in the budget for 2011. By the time we received this, the budget was already in, so we have to adjust the revenue and expenditures in the budget for 2011. And the salary that costs this contract is built into the 12 budget and into the, will be built into the 13 budget, so that's what's coming. This is actually cleaning up the 11 budget.
Second by Supervisor Eckernus. On the resolution, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution carries. Is 610 budget agenda item 11 from the Sheriff's Department. Resolution regarding retired deputy firearm purchase program.
Chairman, this is not the Sheriff's Department's resolution. It was put together for Supervisor Bill Michael, who presented it in Judiciary and Law. We put the resolution together for him. He wanted to make a presentation. He's not here. I know what he wants to do with it, but it's his resolution. It's not the Sheriff's Department.
Could you, you were at that desk or any resolution?
We amended it in two different spots to take out the fact that you have to have 20 years or more. So in the whereas I move that we approve it with the amendments that were approved by the judicial committee last night.
Can you just tell us the amendments?
On the first whereas, or the second whereas, where it says retirement, upon their retirement, just take out all 20 years of service or more, 20 or more years. So, upon their retirement for their service. And then, now therefore, you take out with 20 years or more of service in there. The point was is that the first whereas indicates that the state statutes, HR 218, indicated that they have to be retired in good standing. So, this 20 years that Bill had put in there basically set another hurdle for people to get over. If there was 19 years or whatever years, if they're retiring from Kenosha County with good service, we're saying that they should all fall. Because we're I asked the sheriff last night at the meeting if there was a problem with us having officers just join our sheriff's department just so that they can retire here. You know, and that's not an issue.
Corey, Chuck, what happens to the guns now?
The guns now, when an officer leaves, they're just re-put back in service.
Somebody else uses them.
And we don't issue more than one officer. You know, most officers, most of the sheriffs, the length of retirement, they only have the one. And they use it, they qualify, and they shoot every once in a while. They're qualified. They may have a 25-year.
The city has a similar program.
I know, but why are we for this? I mean, that's what I mean.
This is Supervisor Michael's resolution.
You're not supporting it.
We haven't taken a stand for against. We've just given the information.
Okay. I see it's for a buck. I don't understand it. If they
have to sell it for a certain.
No, I understand that. I understand what it says. Process. But why should we support it? Who's asking for it? And take if the gun is used by somebody else, and therefore if they buy it, we got to purchase from somebody else. I see no reason for this.
That was part of this the idea is that the cost of a gun was about $200, he said, average, and that these guns are used for a long time by taking them out of service and giving them to selling them to retired officers, but then we're bringing a new stock of firearms into the department.
I'm just going to have Al had some comments that he shared with me, and potentially this may need to be, postponed until the Corporation Council can look at it.
This is the first time I've seen this, and I just have a basic question. I think the Corporation Council purchasing should answer relative to whether this is a taxable item, whether under our current purchasing ordinance and the disposal of surplus equipment, whether this is allowable under this, at least in this particular format. But I think, purchasing Corp Council and payroll should probably review and make sure.
I had the same question, and I talked to Carol Neal today, and the disposal of surplus property doesn't apply to this. This is not a surplus property. This is, the definition doesn't fit because it's still serviceable, but it's still being used. Under the ordinance, surplus property is, although it's usable, it's an overstock and you want to get rid of it. And that's not the issue here. So that doesn't apply. There's a procedure that the township kids have been using for years. It's a technical question. And how they do it, and I've got their policy. It's a very simple policy. But I had that same question. I wanted to know if it fell into that definition. So that particular thing doesn't work. And then there was a question raised last night, I think, by Supervisor Haas, but that doesn't apply either because people that are getting the weapons are already police officers. No backgrounds are required. And neither is a 5-day waiting period. They can purchase the weapon because it's all been done already.
Oh, I thought they said that they would have to do a background check.
I think he said that, but that's not the way it is.
Just so I can be clear on the differentiation between retirement and, say, someone who would cease employment via quitting, how is that handled administratively? How does that?
It would be just retirement. Not resigning or being terminated.
That's why they said in good standing, because you could retire in bad standing, too. So.
Well, just from your own definition, then, what does it take to retire from the county as a sheriff? I mean, is there a minimum amount of time that's required?
They can really retire and they can receive benefits, I think, minimal benefits after 10 years, but most counties don't do that. It's usually about after 20 years.
My age 53.
At 53, although they can retire at 50, the state does allow that, but then the county doesn't do that. Normally it's 53, and normally it's got at least 20 years. I haven't seen anybody else retired medically that was retired before 20 years.
This is relatively a common practice in law enforcement across the country. I never give it much thought. I've known about it, but I guess you're telling the officer partial reward for good service, and you see the able to continue to do that piece of, have that piece of equipment that he's had all those years. HR 218 gives us all us retirees the ability to carry that weapon concealed here, regardless of any other laws and ordinances by the states or local governments. So, I don't see any need to object to this order.
Supervisor,
okay. How much is the value of the weapon you're talking about here? On the average, it depends on the weapon. Bought brand new, they're about $300 or $400.
If somebody had it for 20 years and then you leave and you pass it on to somebody else, does it get reconditioned?
We service them. We keep them operational.
But from a county standpoint, it's still worth $300-$400. Well, you're not buying another one, a brand new one.
We're not buying
it. In this case, you'd have to buy something.
We would have to buy a new one.
So, I mean, strictly looking at it from a financial standpoint, I think it needs to be looked at a little bit more closely.
The
value of a new gun as you walk out the door is 60% of what you pay for it. That's how much depreciation is walking 30 feet from the counter. And 20 years later, it's down there.
We average what, about 3 retirees per year? I think that's what was said last night.
We're going to probably average a few more right now, but sometimes you don't have anybody retire. Sometimes you have 2 or 3.
So we answered the purchasing question or the issue with the ordinance with the disposing of assets. As far as whether it's a taxable event because you're selling something below fair market value is a question for payroll, but I don't think that should preclude us from being able to act on this. So, Supervisor Gintz.
I am, but just that, when I look at this stuff, I always look at all the different avenues, and this might be way offline at all. But what happens if somebody retires from the Sheriff's Department, then they go on to do something, that would require them to use it? What if they go into, private investigator, security places, or stuff like that? I mean, is there an issue with us having being a partner and getting with that gun? Or, not that anybody would do any, I'm just looking at it from down the road, what could happen.
It would be a purchase like you purchase at the store. And there's no liability attached to selling. It becomes their property, what they do with it. I would imagine that a lot of police officers, well, sheriff's deputies, they stay armed after they retire under HR Bill 218. And I would imagine, I'm only guessing if they're allowed to buy their service weapon, that's the gun they would always maintain because they're so used to it. They've been shooting them all the years. Most of these guys retire, have to go out, or they buy their own weapon, but they're still armed. We hire a lot of guys, part-timers, to run our trips. We have about 20 part-timers, retired police and sheriff's deputies, and run the state.
Right, I hear them doing stuff all the time, retired law. All right, that's fine with me. I have no problem with it. Supervisor Rose?
I'd like to hear what the Sheriff's Department position is on this. Where's the need for this? I have confidence that these are good people, use them well, and all of that, and they deserve it, but you can give them a badge, too, and or other ways of commemorating their service, but I don't quite understand this particular thing because you're giving them a gun here. Is there some need for this? What problem are we addressing? And you are going to have to get a replacement of this. It's not like this is some great memento of their service. I don't think they view it that way, do they? I don't know. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. I don't know. But I'd like to hear more about that particular point. When Al retires over here, do we send him off with his computer? Calculator, yeah. His abacus. I don't know. I don't know. Where is this coming from?
Supervisor Michael, I think you just wanted to recognize the sheriff's deputies service for the years they spend in, and as Supervisor Eckin has said, this is a common practice throughout the country, and the Georgia Police Department is doing it for years. They're going to buy their service weapon, and I think he wanted to do that. This particular resolution did not come from our department. We did not sponsor it.
Yeah. I think I got that point.
He asked us to write it, and we did, with his name on it. And it was his presentation. We didn't approach him on this at all. He came to us and asked me if I would have one put together. This is what he wants to do. Mm-hmm. And I said, if that's what you want.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd move to adjourn this till the next meeting. And I'd like to hear from some deputies association or the position of the administration or a little more history about it or what it's mean. I'm not in favor of just giving away county property that's perfectly usable that somebody else can pick up and use. And that's what this involves.
So there's been a motion to postpone until the next meeting. It's been moved by Supervisor Burrows, second by Supervisor May. I don't want to cut off discussion because I didn't want to make some comments as well. Do you have anything else you want to say, Mr. Chair?
One of the issues that I think is brought up here is a concern about the finances. Is there a concern about financing or paying or buying the new guns? Is that going to be a major concern for the Sheriff's Department and the Sheriff's budget?
It won't be our concern. It will be the county board's concern if they want to authorize the weapons. I mean, if we'll put it in the capital outlay that we will need service weapons, we're going to allow these to be purchased. So we would have to make up those weapons and we would put it into our budget position. The cost of the weapons compared to everything else we buy is pretty minimal. And again, as it was said at the table, these weapons are used pretty near 20, 30, 40 years. And when a weapon becomes unserviceable, we have armors on the department, of all the brands, and they work on it. If the gun is deemed not operational anymore, and you can't replace a part of it, then we will take it out of service. That doesn't happen too often because the guns, as long as they're maintained, last a long time. But we would have to put in. If the department increased or a weapon was destroyed, we have to replace it. We would do that. We would do that if the reason the board passes resolution.
I have a question for you, Chief Deputy. How do you feel about your weapon?
No, he didn't know. What's the question?
If you're planning on carrying your weapon after you retire, is that better for you? I mean, I'm just not the $200 that you're saving or $400.
You want a personal.
Personal, yeah. How do you look at it?
I don't have any sentimentality towards a weapon, towards a gun. I think that a lot of officers do. I don't personally. It wouldn't affect me one or the other, whether I would have this particular weapon or one of my own shoes. However, I think that that's probably in the minority, as most police officers have. It's a tool, but it's a different kind of tool than an abacus or a computer. This is a tool that is used to protect life or take life. And officers maintain life because their life can depend on it if it doesn't operate. And they have to make sure that they can return fire or use it to protect somebody else. If it's not taken care of and maintained, that's why they like a lot of these guys hang on to this thing because it becomes an extension of them. It's a strange thing, a phenomenon for police work, but that's what it is. And I think it's like a military guy with his rifle. This is my opinion. I hang on. If it doesn't work, you're dead or somebody else. And that's how they feel about their life. Now, how they would use that after they work. But I think a lot of them care.
My feeling is this is a de minimis amount, very minimal. And to have these retired law enforcement in our community carrying their weapons and weapons that they're proficient with is worth the amount of money that we're missing. So I'm fully in support of this.
Actually, when you outfit an officer when they come on, this is a fraction of what the expense to outfit that officer is, and it's not a very big fraction either. Because what is it now? It's going to cost you what, $2,000,
$2,500? It costs almost $2,000 to outfit them, that deputy sheriff to give him what he needs to operate what he does, and the weapon itself is. Because it's one that we have in stock, and
Supervisor Arkansas is right. There's a, these things that reach out like cards and you drag them off the lot. And they're only really, really valuable to collect things. You know, they're on eBay or collect things, but they're not that expensive. But it is a cost. And it's a recognizable cost, but I have to agree with Supervisor Arkansas and yourself that this is not, it's a minimal expense that you do. And I think Supervisor Michael, my own opinion, was right, just recognize their service. And the city's, again, I'll reiterate, the city has been doing this for years. They were surprised that we didn't work, but it's never been.
Is that right?
Well, not everything that the city does is right.
Not
everything.
Well, that one I can share.
That
one is Supervisor.
Yes.
Supervisor.
Do you have other weapons besides your service revolver that you were issued when you started?
No, when I started, we bought everything ourselves. Yeah. Everything. They gave me a badge.
And
18 bullets. And 18 bullets, yeah. And I had a but that's all they get. I mean, we in those days, we bought everything.
You bought your own weapon?
Yes.
You bought your own weapon?
Yeah, I bought two. And, you know,
you upgraded technology somewhere along the line.
Well, down the line, obviously, things changed and things were supplied. But and they were done that way to create uniformity and things like that. You know? So guys like to buy their own.
That leads me to, does the sheriff's department have a standard base piece of weapon that they provide?
Yes.
And it's
Glock 40 caliber, that's what they're all carrying.
With X amount of
ammunition.
A clip, 17 clip or whatever?
No, we have three different models of the Glock 40, depending on what you do. Detectives carry a size, administration carries a smaller gun, and officers on the road carry a larger Glock 40. They're all the same caliber. They're just three different model types that different range ammunition. But a small one, like that I carry, is 8 rounds.
But if I didn't like that weapon, could I had another one, could I bring it on as a deputy? They're stuck with what you give it.
Okay. What your weapon is not your option. Okay. We did that for uniformity. We don't want 5 or 6 different guns out there. Because for training purposes, we can all train the same way for ammunition purposes. You know, because it's tough to get ammunition.
There was a motion to postpone. If you're in favor of postponing the next meeting, say aye.
Aye.
You're opposed?
No.
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 So the motion to postpone has been failed. Any other questions? Has there been a motion on the resolution?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Singer, as amended by the Judiciary Law Committee. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Aye. So let the record reflect that the resolution passed. Agenda item 12. It is 6:30 from the county clerk. Discussion and possible action regarding tax deeded property.
There's no resolution.
There's no resolution.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. We have two issues actually on the tax deed before you tonight. I asked that we look at the tax deed property for Gary Bosey first. I put the information in your packet. On Catherine Michelle. I also have Corporation Counsel Brian Bosher here to answer any questions you may have. This is a tax deed property that we took in, I believe it was in November, right before Thanksgiving. It's an occupied home. There's been probably a good 5 years that they've been going back and forth trying to get this property for her to pay the taxes she did it, so we took it by tax deed. Ms. Michelle approached Attorney Lousy she was very upset about losing her home. She's apparently taking care of some invalid relatives with her. We didn't want to go through the eviction process before the holidays. Ms. Lousy is doing this pro bono for her and presented us with this letter, talked with Corporation Counsel. The recommendation that they would like us to do is to rent the property to her. We don't want to be doing this long-term. We're looking at something like maybe a three-month initial lease that's renewable by month-to-month, which would give us a 30-day notice. She did deposit $1,000. I did get a fax from her. It was deposited within a trust with Ms. Losey's office. And this money would be in a trust. If she did not pay the rent, then that money would come from there, and she would automatically go through the eviction process if she missed a payment with us. Ms. Rochelle is asking for probably 6 months to a year. I don't know that we want to go that long, but like I said, we could do a three-month initial renewable with a month-to-month lease. We do have the home insurance through the county. I checked with Barna and I got that all the information. They would sign waivers for the, and Bernie can talk to you a little bit more about that. So we're trying to work with this person. She's been in a pretty tough bind for a while, I guess, taking care of a lot of relatives. And she would like to move out of the state, but at this time with winter and everything, it's not possible for her.
Chairman, I had a question. If in real estate, I guess maybe it's an attorney question. If we have a lease on there, we can still sell it, build the property, right? The lease or the tenancy would just go with the ownership or whoever.
That's true, but I think...
So it doesn't stop us from selling the property, right?
This particular property we sell at auction because it's a tax-deed property. Mm-hmm. And I think the county clerk would probably time it so that the lease is just about up at the time of the auction. And the reason it's before the board is, or before this committee, is because we haven't done it in the past. We don't rent out tax deed properties. Usually we don't have very good property when we get them by tax deed. That might be part of it, but this particular property is worth about $170,000. And what happened was the mortgage company just did not, you know, foreclose, and they did not pay the taxes, and neither did the homeowner. Very unusual that a property of this value would come to us. And so, very, you know, that it comes to us so seldom, I told the county clerk she has authority to rent, she has control of our tax deed property, but probably she wants guidance from this committee whether or not this is something we want to do.
Supervisor Grady?
Would Corporation Counsel speak upon our liability as a de facto landlord? What type of arrangement, if we were to pursue this, we could have that we're not on the hook for any potential calamities?
Well, the would-be renters have agreed to sign hold harmless agreements, but the reality of it is I'm not so sure if those would hold up. And so we do have insurance, of course. The county-wide has insurance liability for wrongful act and property damage if the place would have burned down. We do have a sizable deductible on our insurance policy, which is our exposure. $200,000 for the $10 million. So it's more like...
On the fire, if it was to burn down? We have...
No, that's a very small deductible for a fire deductible. Very small. But that's unlike...
I'm more concerned about an action that might take place where something would happen, a boiler would explode, you know, some type of unforeseen circumstance, tenant fault, act of nature, whatever, where we could be possibly held as not responsible, but at least culpable to a certain extent in the event that something would happen. So that is the area that I think I'm most concerned about. Your comment is that although they can sign hold harmless, that's not necessarily the end of it. When it comes to what happens in court, they're often found to be, what, not valid?
Well, I don't know if the person, the adult who is renting, can speak for some of the disabled adults that live with her. I don't know the nature of the disability. Plus, they could move in and out. Different people could come in. Guests of the tenant could sue us. They haven't signed any hold harmless. That's the sort of issue that's on.
Supervisor Adams.
Well, to begin with, I'm not real comfortable with the county becoming a landlord resident. properties? I mean, you start with this, or where does it end?
Right. Well, and I'm not either, Supervisor, because I don't, this is not going to be a precedent-setting thing. We do not, I don't want to deal with people in my landlords and taking care of properties and things either. This was an extenuating circumstance. Ms. Rochelle's had a lot of, you know, different medical problems. She's on a very limited income. Her goal is to get move out of the state. By the time we go through the eviction process and everything, it's probably going to be 6 months before we even get her out of there and the rest of her family and stuff. So it's kind of a process we're trying to work with her rather than evict her out of her family home. She inherited the home from her parents, and she's taking care of people. And I know it's kind of a sob story type thing, but it is extenuating circumstances, and by no means is this going to be a precedent setting. We do not want to do this with any other homes. We have many homes that are going to be coming to us through tax deed, unfortunately, and so no, I definitely don't want this to be a precedent setting. It would be a short-term type thing if it's approved.
Is there a mortgage?
Not anymore.
There was.
Tax deeds cut off mortgages.
Okay. Unfortunately, it's other people that decide whether or not we set a precedent. So we say this isn't a precedent, but once you've done it, it is a precedent. You've done it. People can point back to it. It did it there. Why won't you do it here and here and here? So I'm not comfortable with it.
Okay.
Well,
it sounds like they're going to be in the property anyway, which is probably good. In the case of vacant properties, if you have vacant property, there's more chance of having vandals destroy it and do damage to it. Some value might have less of a chance of that happening. In that sense, it's a good thing. Plus, we would receive some rent in the 6 month period. If we have the ability to sell it, just because we have a month-to-month tenancy doesn't mean we can't sell it at auction. We can still sell it at auction and sell those problems to someone else. And I think because of the situation, I think we should take a look at it and start to rent it out.
I agree. From a, let me just first ask this question. If we have the resident in there, and we're in the eviction process, is our liability exposure any different as a county entitled to a tax-deeded property versus a county leasing property? Is our exposure different?
I believe it is. Because before you start the eviction property, you give the person an order to vacate. Then you bring the eviction saying to the court, they don't have any legal right to remain in the property. So they're illegally holding on. So we haven't made any implicit or explicit promises that it's suitable for habitation. In these properties, we don't get a chance beforehand, you know, like a buyer does, to inspect it for safety and so forth like that. In respect of it, your question was, during an eviction process, do we have less exposure than during a rental process?
Yes, legally. Through our normal process to evict, the exposure that the county has, the supervisor Gray makes a good point. That building blows out and something happens. Yep. Relative to the tenant, that where we have a lease, does the county have a different level of exposure?
Yes, it's a reduced level of exposure. If we're going through eviction, you know, we got a tax deed, we own it now, we're evicting the person's occupying it after they hold over, and you know, we're just exerting our rights. We're not giving them any, we're not permitting them to stay there. The opposite is true. They don't have a right to stay there, we're asking them to leave. So we have different set of duties and less risk exposure in that situation than a landlord-tenant situation where, you know, it's supposed to be suitable for habitation and, you know, we have some duties of maintenance and things like that.
Supervisor Smith?
Yes.
Supervisor Supervisor Gibbs.
My question relates to the bottom of this. Rate waivers of liability, a hold ROC. You basically said that if the right towards you,
I would probably write it
up. I mean, you could include things like if anybody else was on the property as well, then it's not intended. And you can write them so they're favorable to us.
I can write them so they're favorable. I can't prevent the tenants from having guests or other people.
I understand that. But you can incorporate any guests they have in. You can't say anybody that comes onto the property?
I could do it. But it wouldn't be binding as to those people who haven't signed it.
How many people live there?
There's two. There's the Mrs. Michelle, Miss Michelle, she's never been married, and two cousins.
And they're both the same?
The one, I know for sure that the one is in a wheelchair. I'm not sure about the other one. I think they have a heart condition. So they're like at disability. So I'm not sure. I think it's just health disability.
I do think that you have stuff.
Yes.
I think that there is. I happen to agree with Supervisor Singer on this night. I know that it's not a precedent that we want to get into. But I think if we've evicted somebody and something happens on that property, we still have to have insurance to cover that anyway. If somebody squats in it and they cause a problem, really that's our liability. We have to use our insurance to fix that anyway. So I think we're gonna have some exposure one way or another. I do agree that when you're leasing it out, it's a definite different situation. I don't know, this is a tough one.
Well, and that's our situation, and I know we've had the property since November, and we do have insurance on it right now, and we have another house out in Twin Lakes where we have the one that you talked to, Chairman Clark, and we're starting the eviction process on that house right now, but we do have two homes that are occupied that we own, but we do have our insurance umbrella on them right now.
Corporation Council, Supervisor Kent made a comment about insurance and all that. Would you agree with that comment? That we would have some exposure? Yes. I think the burden on that is probably did the county as a new owner act in a reasonable and prudent manner as other counties might act, you know? Did we move promptly enough to either lease it or pass it on?
And we are leasing a tax deed property right now.
We are, except that it's a parking lot.
Right.
So you have a liability if somebody gets hurt on it, I guess.
What would happen if repairs needed to be done? The furnace goes out or needs repairing or numerous things that could happen. I don't know what the condition of this home is, but are you prepared to pay that, or are they going to pay that?
Well, we could write it up that they would pay it, but I don't think they have the financial wherewithal, really, to sustain a major capital improvement like a furnace or a roof or things like that.
So what are we prepared to do then when the furnace needs repair, it's not working, it's cold, disabled people in the house?
I think, to be honest, we haven't worked those issues through. We thought perhaps this would be a thumbs up or thumbs down kind of discussion here at the table. And I didn't negotiate a lease for that reason.
Now, Supervisor Grady.
I think the point that Supervisor Rose has brought up, whether you have tenants in there, it's occupied or not. You're not going to let the pipes freeze, and you're going to replace it. You're going to replace it. You have a hole in the roof.
Maybe
you're going to, as landlord, you're going to replace it.
If there's nobody in there, you wouldn't do that.
Well, we would have to maintain the property so that the pipes wouldn't freeze.
I mean, what do you do now?
Well, the houses that we've had in the past were uninhabitable, and we actually got them out and sold them as fast as we could.
So let me carry on. I still got the floor. I'd like to continue my line of thought here, and it revolves around the fact that I don't really like this as a matter of business. I don't think it's being presented as something we do routinely. I can see in this circumstance, if the agreement is crafted properly and the county's exposure is limited to as small as possible, even including in your agreement that successors to the tenants, you know, if they should all somehow perish, the tenants, that successors have no right or ability to craft the county, things along those lines. I think if we're crafting property, I can probably be in agreement with doing this.
From a county standpoint, I don't like it. From a human being standpoint, I like it.
That's our biggest issue.
And I could go along with the lease, I guess, under one stipulation, and that, well, under that, where the corporation council was doing their best to protect the county, but I believe we should put that, move as fast as we can to go through the auction process subject to lease. If that's legal, I would prefer to see you, you know, lease it, but you can sell it subject to the lease. So if you're going to allow someone to stay there for up to a year, not too much. You know, that there's a definite exit date on the lease. That we have a definite exit date and we move as quickly as possible to sell the property so investors can take it. And if they find value in it, then they do. Supervisor Gaines.
As it pertains to that, and I agree with you, that is the exact amount. I mean, from the county's point of view, absolutely not immediately. From a human standpoint, you know, can we help out somebody that's struggling in this economy with as limited amount of exposure to the county as possible? But I want to touch on something you said. I don't know that you can do both at the same time. I'm not an attorney. We have two of them in the room. But can you evict somebody and then lease them a property? I mean, because basically you're telling them to get out.
We haven't evicted them
yet. I mean, you know, but that's what you said, though. Start
no,
the eviction I process.
No, I said lease the property and start the auction to sell it.
Sell it.
Put a door auction.
It takes a while to get to the auction date of sale. And she has other duties that won't really happen until probably early summer. Right?
So you can line this up for auction?
We can get everything ready for auction, but we have probably quite a few properties yet that are coming through, so we don't want to do the auction too early. You know, because of the fact that we're going to have more than one auction and the expense of holding the auction with all the public, you know, putting everything in the public notices in the paper and that. And it would be good to do them all at once, you know, for people to view the properties. And wintertime is not the best time to have people coming. I mean, obviously, we haven't done houses. We did a house last winter, which we were able to sell before the end of the year, which is helpful. But I just with the winter coming, that's going to make it difficult.
So
we can, if you like, we can put it up for auction sooner, and they probably will sell, but then they're going to have to deal with removing the occupants.
But if we do a six-month lease, and you, can you time it? I guess, I don't know, can you time it roughly that it'll go
the
up?
The auction would be at the same, oh, absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
Well, I guess I wouldn't, I'm sorry, go ahead. I really am not in favor of putting this on a year or some indefinite amount of time.
Okay.
I mean, I would be for, you know, like a 6 month boom, and at that point, you know, we're going to be putting it up for auction. You know,
give them that much time.
Right.
And
I mean, that way you're kind of doing both ways. We're getting ourselves ready to sell it. Meanwhile, we're helping them out, trying to limit our liability during that period of time.
On that point, as the county clerk mentioned, they have asked for a six-month or one-year lease, and our county clerk's recommendation to you is maybe a three-month lease, and after that, month to month, so that we only have to give 30 days notice to pay.
Just one comment, though. You can sell a property subject to the lease, even if it went longer, and however you decide, right?
Oh, sure.
This property, $40,000, that's what is owed?
It will sell. I mean,
we don't sell it for that. You know, we sell it for the up in the assessed value.
I mean, that's what somebody will come in and bid, and then I'll go from there.
No, they won't. We don't even put it. We don't start at that price. I mean, we look at what the assessed value is on the property. We also look at what's owed on the property, and we'll look at a comparison of what homes are in the area and what they sold for, and come in with. We don't want to overprice it because we don't want to keep these properties. We want to be able to sell them. But it would definitely would sell for more than the $40,000.
But you can rent this month to month with the understanding that when it changes ownership, whether it's 30 days from now or 6 months from now, it's up to the new owners whether they'll continue to rent to them or take them out.
We may have a problem trying to sell it with it being occupied, too. I mean, somebody may not want to go through the process
if the price
they want
is
to
rent
the home for themselves.
Just talking about the prices that we sell them for, we had a discussion, maybe we're going to get to that. Mm-hmm. We're going to get to that.
We're going to get to that in the next part of our
Supervisor Singer.
I'm for this. Sounds like a reasonable way of maintaining the property. We don't have to, if we kick them out and get out right away, we got to pay all the utilities to maintain this property. This way, they're paying the utilities and everything. I would like to make a motion that we approve it.
Discussion and possible action.
One point, though, is I do, to be prudent, I think we should go in there and inspect the property, so that they can't later on come to us and say, well, you never even went in and looked at it to see if it wasn't habitable.
Yeah, we have not gone in yet because our usual procedure is that once we take the property, once it's vacant, then we go in and we change the locks and we inspect the property. But because of the situation where we have people occupying these homes right now, we have not gone in. But if we do the lease, then that would be one of the stipulations.
Do you do a formal inspection from an inspection company or something, or how do you do that?
We can maybe pick some of our maintenance people or someone that's, you know, that knows things about. I mean, I wouldn't do it on my own.
So from a procedural standpoint, what are you looking for from this committee?
County clerk has authority to lease these properties. It's so unusual. She wanted to get your guidance, so a motion by you giving guidance for resolving.
Okay, so we'll have something in the minutes.
Right.
Court counsel's recommendation is that the ash you're taking.
Yes. That'll be in the minutes because the county clerk.
I don't have a recommendation.
The county clerk is asking to tone input from a legislative body. Her opinion, and we're going to give her an opinion that we either do or don't support leasing the property under certain conditions.
Through the chair of the corporation council, I can see the reason and the rationale for going and inspecting the property. If we do go in and inspect the property, don't we then kind of get into a Pandora's box or open up a can of worms, saying that we had a certain knowledge and if something were to be a mess or not done properly, we didn't respond to a condition of analogy. So I would very much like to delve into that fact. Do we do the inspection and all that comes with it, or do we basically just proceed with what we have? That's my question.
I think the county clerk will have responsibilities that end of things to make sure it's safe for habitability. And the inspection that she does will be given to any buyers. Say we decide it's too costly to make the repairs. It's still in her, this is a guidance sort of motion. It's still up to her. She's going to have to make a decision to rent it or not. And if it's after the inspection is over and she sees that it's minimal problems and safe to live there, she decides to let them live there, then that's not a big deal. And when we go to sell it, we'll give that safety inspection to the buyer. And if she finds that there is a big expensive repair that needs to occur, she may decide it's not worth renting it.
That part I understand.
We don't know that.
My question is, doing the inspection, though, based, if I'm saying it correctly, that's a foregone conclusion. we're going to go in there and do an inspection regardless. Is that my understanding?
If the house was vacant, we wouldn't do an inspection. We would just go in and we would make sure, we would change the locks, and we would make sure that the heat was set at a certain temperature, that the pipes wouldn't burst, and that, and then we would put the house up for auction.
But in this case?
But in this case, if we do rent it, and Supervisor Simmons' recommendation, it probably would be a good idea to check it and make sure that there would be any issues that might come up while they're in the home.
That's my question.
How I would proceed with this is I would get an independent inspection, not county people. I don't want a liability. Anybody saying, well, it was your people that went in there. I would get an independent thing, and I would also get that done prior to executing any lease. And I would make sure that there's nothing that's critical for the next 6 months.
What I would like to do, if it's approved, is I would like it to be a short lease. We could probably do an auction, probably, I would think, by May, as soon as we get done with the spring primary and the spring election, because right now we're pretty busy in our office trying to get everything done for the elections to set up all the stuff that needs to be into the tax deed auction. But we could probably get an auction together in May and put that house up by then. And hopefully, if she has a timeline and she knows, you know, we can do a 3 month and then a month to month at that point. And with the end result being that she would need to be out by June 1st.
So however you want to structure it, that was going to be my next point. But I would get that independent inspection so that we're off the hook on the inspection. Mm-hmm. I'd also get that done before the lease is executed so that we know if there's any, you know, if the furnace has a cracked heat exchanger and there's something in there, I don't want to rent it to anybody. Okay? And then I would do, I mean, I suppose his motion allows you to do it however you want. I would be comfortable with either the 3 or the 6, but at the end of the 6, I would tell him that that's it. You want to do a 3 month a month, you're going to be structuring it, that's fine either way, but we need to have that done, you know, get that to auction, get it done in that timeline, not the 6 month timeline. However you want to, if you want to leave that latitude up to her, yeah, that's fine.
Well, it sounds like from the corporation counsel she has that attitude anyway.
Right, so it's but just we can recommend.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're helping her tonight by giving her these ideas, and I think that way it'll protect the county.
You know, we're spending a lot of money, we're spending money for something we're not involved in. We spend $500 to $700 for an inspection. What about the repairs? There's going to be something coming up where don't we then have a duty as a landlord to do something? And this is very complicated for $500 a month. This was a property she inherited for worth $170,000 and didn't pay the taxes. How responsible is this? Why are we in this business? Why do we want to get into this business? We're not in the real estate business here. We're going to have a lot of difficult situations. I understand why she wants to stay in the property. But from our perspective, do we want all these responsibilities as a landlord? Now, you not only get the inspection, but now you know there's something wrong with it. Now you're on notice. You've got some duties. Right now, I don't know anything about it. But now I'm assuming responsibilities. I think you're marching down a road here that you don't want to go.
I mean, the eviction process is not going to be done by May.
Well, we certainly
will. Eviction doesn't take that long.
You can get it done in a month if you're determined.
Oh, the eviction. Yeah.
Why do we want to keep this? Why not sell it? We're not in the real estate business here. There's much subsidized housing in the community. There's housing out here on where the old county garage was for disabled people. Remember? That was sold for that purpose at a less than fair market value price, in my view. There's subsidized housing right down here for senior citizens right over here that just went up and they're seeking tenants right now. I mean, this is There's many other practical solutions which don't involve all kinds of other issues that could tumble into some substantial expenses. You can't just say to people, well, we'll allow you to stay there and then find out there's all kinds of things wrong with it, and we're doing this because, why? Because we're sympathetic, and now you're allowing them to stay there with all of these problems, then you get your slum landlord. I'm not going to support this. Renter's insurance here. This only covers her share. It doesn't cover our share. Are you going to say to her, what's that? Contents. Her contents.
Yeah.
Are you going to say to her, well, we want insurance here that covers our responsibility? Well, now you're adding on another big cost to her. Then you're going to come back here and say, well, what are we going to do about that? I don't see this.
We haven't heard from our youth and governance in a long time.
A dilemma.
This is your chance.
She said you.
Yeah. you're way out of line.
Man, Terry's throwing them all the time. Singers all over the place.
Not Euchre.
I'm really just being sympathetic at this point. I'm being sympathetic at this point, and I think we should rent it.
Supervisor Evans.
Before I would rent to anybody, I would want to know what kind of a tenant they're going to be. Here, you can do that by going into the property and inspecting it to see what kind of care they are taking care of the property as it is. Given the fact that it belongs to this person who got it for nothing or next to nothing and run up a bill like this, I would be very leery of that person being the kind of tenant I would want to rent to. So, you know, as nice as people can be, I've been in places where, you know, it looks great from the outside. The people are very well taken care of as far as their washrooms, you know, cleaning, everything like that. And then you go into the house and you see the way they are living. We don't know that. Nobody's gone in there and looked it over. We are the owners, and we've got every right to know what the interior, well, how the property is being taken care of inside and out. I'm against doing this, but if it's going to be done, I'd say that there's a whole lot of things that need to be done before you make a decision to do this. But as I said, I'm against it anyways, but I do feel that if you're going to do this, you've got to take some steps to make sure that it's in the best interest of the owner.
I'm going to try to move this along. The county clerk has heard her concerns with this committee. She is a constitutional officer of this county who has the authority to do this. So if you want an opinion from this committee whether they would support you in your conclusions to lease this property, that's what the motion is at issue. So the motion would be in support of the county clerk to lease the property should she deem it. Supervisor Singer.
Second
by Supervisor Green. We have plenty of discussion. Do you have anything else you want to say, Supervisor Green?
Well, if I was in business renting a house, I'm assuming this is a three-bedroom house. Most of them are over there, and there's three people living there. It's 50% under market, and you're giving them a $500 rent.
We didn't put the rent.
Well, that's what she's asking to pay.
For.
So that's what you're going to agree to take, right?
We haven't agreed on
500 is way under market. And forget the value of the house, the assessed value and everything else. That's pretty irrelevant to everybody. Whatever you sell it at the auction, that's what you're going to get for it. In this market, who knows what that's going to be? It's going to be way south of $170,000, regardless of what's owed on it or anything.
He's only, this lawyer's only asking for a 6 month lease. If you left him sit there for three more months, if you're not getting anything today, you have no liability, no anything to worry about. Tell me you're out of there in 3 months.
Yeah, we're going around. Mm-hmm.
I just have one legal question on the attorney. How does it work then? It's a tax deeded property. We own it free and clear. Is that it? If we sell it for more than what the taxes are, do we have to give money back to her or back to the mortgage company?
There's some arrangements for what you do with money over the tax amount, but mostly the county and the city would get reimbursed their expenses, and we'd get the lion's share. If they ask for participation, they could participate in the surplus, depending on the sale price.
If who asked?
If the former owner. There's a statute.
It's a homestead. It's a homestead property. They're entitled to a portion of it. But we don't know if it's a homestead property. We had a property like that, but we didn't sell the property for enough to give the former homeowner anything. Right. Once we paid everything off.
Okay. Well, that's why I asked. It was a legal question. It is.
On the resolution, on the motion, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Roll call. Supervisor Yance?
Aye.
Supervisor Edwards?
No.
Supervisor Rose?
No.
Music Edwards?
Aye.
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 No. Aye. So we have how many people here?
More than you need.
Five guys. Four.
There you go. Four, three committee and aye for the.
No decision. She counts two.
No.
No. No. No.
Thank you.
No.
Thank you very much.
Okay, continuing on with your report.
Okay, moving on to the other part of the report that I submitted with your packets is by the request of Chairman Clark. We put together the tax deed property sales for 2010-2011 and the current tax deed properties that we've taken in the year 2011. If you look at the report of the current tax deed properties owned, the ones in the green are actually the higher price. And
ours are blue.
Oh, I'm very sorry, the dark gray. Well, we start with you on the recommendation of planning and development. I always.
Yeah. Are we on page one of two? Is that what you're looking at?
I'm on page one of two. All right. When I get a tax deed property, I send a parcel number out to planning and development for their recommendation. As you can see, that a lot of them that are starred are in wetlands. So we do have quite a few that we took. They also make a recommendation of whether or not we should retain them. Sometimes we sell them to the DNR. Sometimes the Shewaukee Prairie, depending on where they're at, will purchase them. At this time with the economy, there aren't too many that anybody's purchasing for those areas. We have a couple properties that are of value. You can see the one, the Green Bay Road property, we have not looked at an assessed yet. The one for 41A, the assessed price on that. We just took that this at the end of December, so I've not had time to look at the property and review it. As you go down to the one on 26th Avenue, that's the property we were in discussion about. The next one that's not starred after the wetlands, it would be in the gray area, I think, too, mine in green. That's the property we just took out in Twin Lakes, and we're in the process of doing the eviction notice with that. And as soon as that's gone through, then I'll come back to the finance admin looking at how we were going to negotiate the prices on that. Pleasant Prairie ones. The Roosevelt Road Theater property is another one that has very high assessments on it, and that's where we also are leasing those parking lots. And I've talked with the city about the specials and the interest and trying to lower some of them, waive some of them, so that we can get some of these tax deed properties back on the tax rolls. I sent over at least 30 files, which they have for a month and sent back with no recommendation. So
what is that? Do we need anything from them to sell a tax deed property?
No, because now we've, during Corporation Council, the Treasurer Terry Jacobson and I have found in the state statutes where in previous tax deed sales, we've always given the majority of the money back to the city for the specials and the assessments. But now we actually can take what's owed to the county first, and whatever is left over, we can give to the city. So we've done that. We've taken a couple properties. If you look at our sold properties,
sales.
So if you look at the one that we sold in Salem at 113.25, it's the second one from the top there. The value on it says $81,200. I can tell you what that property looked like. It was completely gutted. There wasn't an appliance in it. There wasn't a pipe in it. There was no furnace in it. There was no light in it. There was nothing. And so we basically sold it for the $30,000 just because it's a liability. It was totally uninhabitable. There was no way we would get anywhere near the assessed value on it. It's still for sale. And that's after they went in and they redid it all. They, you know, refurbished it. The one on 21st Avenue, 7837 21st Avenue, right below that, that was one of the first houses we took. That house had broken windows in it that was open to the elements for years. For years. There was no water. The pipes had burst. It was mold. I had the city come through it and give me another assessment on it because at that time it was assessed at $150,000. And that's where we came up with the value of the, and we did sell it for $51,187. And that at that time that was a homestead property, but there was nothing of value left after everything was paid. So basically we sold it for what was owed on it. The other properties are unbuildable that were sold, the Chewaukee Prairie ones. The DNR purchasing, like I said, they'll purchase them from us. We try and look at the what's owed on the taxes for those properties versus on the assessed value because it's being taken over by the DNR. And then our other parcels, the ones for in Paddock Lake that we sold for $1 on the lower part in 2011, those were properties that were tax deeded that were unbuildable in wetlands, and the Paddock Lake kept sending us bills for cutting the grass and for taking care of the properties because there was obnoxious weeds. And so we talked with Paddock Lake and I said, listen, we're never going to pay those bills that you keep sending us. They just go in on the property, it never gets paid. So we worked it out where they bought them, they're taking care of them, and they've done all the paperwork of doing that with us. This one here that is 5032 27 Court. This was one of our test properties with the where most of the money was owed to the city. We sold it to an abutting property owner. They just wanted it for to build a garage on or to have an extended yard. And we looked at what the taxes were owed on it, and that's kind of what we sold it for, so that the county got the money owed. And we think we set the city $1 or something. And we haven't heard anything from them. And that was sold in July. The same again with that bottom property on 13th Avenue. If you're familiar with that area, it's right along the viaduct. You could barely build a garage on that property, and the same thing we did. Although that one, we didn't sell it for exactly what the taxes were owed, but we wanted to just sell it to the money property owner and get it back on the tax rolls. And when we sold those properties, we joined the parcels together, so now they're one. They're instead of two individual parcels, it's one parcel. And those are about all the ones that we sold and how we came up with the prices for them. And I know we'll be probably having a pretty large tax deed auction coming up this spring. We're hoping for early May in between elections because we'll have an election in August also this year. And we may have other elections, but I don't know about that.
So we had, I think, in a meeting a couple months ago, just talked about the process of how you're going to set the value, mm-hmm. and that it comes back to the committee to confirm. Is that what you decided to do?
Correct. And I actually, I'm on the Palm Kenosha Area Land Management group, which is with Terry and Louise, Carl Samuelson, and Planning and Development are on this committee. And I would recommend it to them at the end of this year that you form a committee just for the tax deed process. And I think I mentioned it to you too, to the record today, about maybe being a realtor of on the committee, or I was going to talk to you about it.
Yeah, you were going to do that.
Yeah, I thought we mentioned it over the counter over the holidays, yeah. But we were going to talk about that, where we could maybe get utilized real estate, and then they can look at the property with us and maybe come up with a market price or whatever, especially with the market now. I mean, we don't want to have all these properties on our hands. We don't want to go for the assessed value. What I've done in the past before I brought it to the finance, which I didn't before because I was following my predecessor's steps, is what I looked at the property value. I looked at what was owed on it. I tried to come in with a figure that was close to what the assessed value was, but enough to incorporate and pay for all the costs that have been incurred over the years. So, but going forward, I would like a committee. I'm going to form the committee. We're going to look at the properties, and then I'll get a list of properties together with prices and then bring them to the committee for approval.
So under statute or whatnot, whatever you do to determine prices, your prerogative, I guess, it's up to the Finance Administration Committee. You're going to make a recommendation for us to review that information and by resolution set the price.
Correct.
Set the price for auction, and then I think at the same time we ought to have some sort of time mechanism that if it doesn't sell by this, do you publicly do that or you know?
If it doesn't sell, what we end up doing is we have them over the counter, but we can't lower the price on any of them unless we put them up on another auction. Okay. So if we have a property that we've sat on for a while that we've already had up for auction, and I have done that too, we've put other properties, and that's how we sold these couple of properties to the abutting property owners, because they've been up for auction, they never sold. So we reevaluated it, looked at it, brought the price down, and they sold. So, but we can't sell it for less over the counter. I know people have asked, and they said, well, if I come in and offer you $10,000 for something that you had for $15,000, I said, we can't do that. We have to put it back up for auction at a lower price.
Okay. So the price setting, you bring the price to the committee approves, and then you go through the process.
Correct.
That's a minimum bid, right? That's what you're establishing?
It's a minimum bid, yes. You can bid over the price.
Right. I know you're extremely busy with all the redistricting and verifying voter lists and all those things right now. As soon as possible, I think it's prudent to get my tax rolls and get the money in the bank.
Right.
As soon as possible.
And basically what I was waiting with the auction is with the property in Twin Lakes that we're going through the eviction process with, I want to be able to get that property up on the auction. So it depends on how long that process is. We've already started it with Corporation Council. So, and now if we can get that property vacated, because I can't put it up for auction, I don't believe while well, there's still someone in it. I can check with Corporation Council on that.
What's the cost, you said, of going to auction? What's the cost?
It depends on how big of a, how much, if we just do a regular ad and just say we're going to be holding the auction and that, it's probably around, I don't know, $700-$800, depending on how big the ad is. But I think because we're going to have more homes, we're going to have more things, I'd like to put more information on that advertisement saying what we're going to have for auction. Because we have that 9 acres out in Summers also.
Because, not to let the tail hold up the deal, you know, because there are such a lot larger items out there, I would just, whether you got Twin Lakes down or not, that you can see as quickly as you can.
So are you thinking early spring? Are you thinking this winter? I mean, it's kind of hard for
not
people.
Not that winter, but I mean, you get out to spring. I mean, you've got elections to deal with, so right. I mean, I'm hoping that something happened, but maybe by May we're...
Right. Well, that was our goal, was to have it at the end of April or early part of May. That's the first week of May at the latest, yeah, is what we want to do.
Okay. Thank you. Very nice report.
Just a question. These are current tax deed properties. What's the rate that we're assuming deeds on properties? Are we going to see this list increase by a certain percentage?
I actually wanted to have an updated list for you, but I only had it from 2009 because when I first came in and I started working with planning and development, they created a list for me of all the tax deed parcels that Kenosha County owns. It's current up to 2009.
This list is?
No. This is just what we've taken in 2011 and 10. We have a list of there's like 700 properties that the county owns, but the majority of them are in wetlands. They're unbuildable properties. They're little parcels that when the developers made the parcels, they put a number on it, but it wasn't anything that you could do anything with, so people just let them go to tax deed. So we do have a large, there's a lot of tax deed.
Does that include all its Silver Lake property for the flood
zone? That Palmer
Lane. We've been getting all those grants for?
Correct. And the DNR has been taking up a lot of those too. And that's what we're doing, is we're working with the DNR to get them off of ours so they're not on our list, so that the DNR has them, and we have less numbers that we're on our list. But they will probably have a current list by the time I come back to the committee. And I'll have a current updated one all the way through 2011.
That'll be
mine. Well, I can have it when we come back with the tax deduction prices, or I can give it to you and just for your review, as soon as it's ready. And there's a recommendation from plan development for every property that we have. It's either to sell, to retain, give it to the DNR, donate. So there's all different recommendations for the different properties.
That's my question. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Mayne, Spencer.
Just to make a clarification, to add on to what she's been saying. I know some of you kind of gave a little bit of a gasp when she made that mention about the properties, but I want you to know that really the last two county clerks have probably been the ones that have worked the most on trying to bring forward all of the county properties that we've owned. And the times now are so difficult that we are going to probably be seeing more. That's why she's been discussing that with us and why we're thinking it's really important to look at how we've been doing this and what we can improve on. And I give her a lot of credit for that, because it is going to be a difficult situation for all of us. And I can remember back when I first started on the board, we used to hop on the bus as supervisors to try to figure out the price of properties. And that's how it was done then, when I first got on. So it's improved a great deal, and I think that's because of planning and looking at things today. So I just wanted to clarify that a little bit for her, because she was handling kind of a lot on that. So it's
Thank you, very good.
Thank you. Let's say two on the votes are still
Okay, it is 7:24. We are on item number 7:24. We are on item number 13, Register of Deeds, 2011 year-end report.
Right. And I hope that you have gotten your packets ahead of time and had an opportunity to look through those packets that we prepared for you. And as you can see from each page, the first page, of course, is the year-end totals, and of all of the accumulation of fees and expenses that we've done over the year. And the next is actually what we see as our expenditures versus our revenues. That is on page 3. You'll see the revenues and the expenditures and the additional funds that will be rolled over into the county coffers. Then you have a graph, which is actually showing you all of the money that we've accumulated since I've been in office. We didn't do it before, but it's a little harder to envision there. So that's the graph that you have here. And then we also have for you the opportunity to look at how these revenues are. And if you're wondering on the graph where the line goes up so high, that is because we were given additional dollars of $21,773.74 for audits that were done by the Department of Revenue that were improperly fees paid. And we ended up getting that much more money back. We work with the Department of Revenue. We're almost forced to, they'll ask for the deeds and the transactions. And if they do assess those individuals, we do get those dollars back in our county. So that's what that spike is. because we received that much money in the revenue side that particular month. Then we're showing you all of those revenues again on 2011 revenues. And then we're showing you the recordings, the amount of recordings over the years. And as you can see where that big spike was, is when we had the most activity, and it was like 65,000 documents per year that year. And the next also is just again showing you our, let's see, where do we read that? Top part, that is your land shark fees. Those are additional fees that we have accumulated, and that's how much it's grown by computer access. So people going online, buying documents, that's how much it's improved. I think that's great. I mean, those are dollars that we may never have seen before because people were out of town and they wanted to buy a Jeep, but they didn't want to come here. So I think that's really a great increase to show you. And also the last page just shows you the increase we've had in e-recordings. So we're increasing also in that area. There are more and more individuals that are actually doing that electronically, which is really quite interesting.
Is that on top of the number for the recordings? You would add that to the recordings, or is that part of the number?
No, those are added right in.
Okay, so that's part of the 25.
Yeah, they're part of the totals that are all reflected in there. It's just showing you that the numbers have gone up over the years. I also thought I would just give you a brief discussion on a few other items, if you would allow me to. And that is the redaction part. I just want you to know that we have transferred 2.3 million images to our company, and they should be complete with redacting all the Social Security numbers probably by the end of the month. And then that will be a good thing because they'll not be able to see those documents with a Social Security number. So that should be completed, and I thought that you might be interested in knowing that. And that's a big, big step forward. I mean, it's a lot of images that they're going through. Right now, they're actually proofing to make sure that they did not missing. So I think that's very good thing. And we also are, I'll tell you that we're in the process of doing old record, as you know, and the total of microfiche volumes we have are 809. There are 355 volumes. The public is able to search by name only. Of that, 303 have also the scanned images in. So there are 228 volumes. The public is able to search by name, legal description, and tax ID. So we're getting more and more of that information in to the old record into our new system. And 226 volumes still need to be indexed. And then when those are indexed, they'll be able to search them in all ways, just like they do all of the new records today. So there are a total of 506 volumes that need to be imaged yet. And these numbers are as of 12/31 of this year. So we're working on the old information as well. And that's ongoing. So,
what's your estimate of how long it's going to continue to take?
I think forever. I don't think I'll be here, and I don't know about you guys. You know, I can't speak for you. But, I mean, because after the microfiche, then we have the books.
Yes.
And we do have some plans set aside to outsource a little bit this year because we have the additional money for the redaction. So it'll be from the redaction money. It's not from our levy. So I'm trying to push for more of that, so that we get more of the old record done and the Social Security numbers taken out of them as well, as long as we have the money, because that's the increase of being $30. And I already asked for the extension and given that to the committee, and that'll give us another whole year to work on collecting the money and using that money to do redaction of old record. So I'm going to try to get done as much as I can, because that's all the time we have.
Supervisor Green. Repeat the part about, again, what fields can be searched by the public?
Well, the record today is searched by all methods, by branch of right, by name, by legal description, by parcel ID. Yeah.
Okay.
On the internet, too.
Oh, I thought on the internet.
Only those that subscribe. You have to be a subscriber. If you daily user,
okay,
you can only search by a parcel number or legal description.
Or address.
for this.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. We limit the public that isn't a subscriber to those searches only.
Okay.
But if you are a subscriber, which we have quite a few,
okay,
they pay a higher fee and then they can search by all methods.
And that's the land chart you're speaking of?
That is correct.
Okay. What is the fee for land chart?
It's $650.
Per year?
Mm-hmm.
And that's unlimited?
That's unlimited. Okay.
So Landshark is going to be expanding its fields so they can do more? Or
no.
Is that staying the same?
No, no, no. We're expanding it by putting it in.
Okay.
By adding that in more, okay, then that allows them to search for more of those properties, okay, that were recorded years ago in the old method.
Okay. And the public will remain the same just by parcel number, address,
that
or...
That is correct.
What's the, is there a third?
Maybe description.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think probably... we're upgrading our system, so it'll be called LandLink. It'll be a little bit different, but it's the same.
Well, I like
triangle.
Sure. I like that.
Well,
sure.
It's supposed to be better. It is supposed to be better. Yeah, it's just they changed the names.
Isn't there a beer that to that name?
That's Jimmy
Buffett's.
Oh, there is. Oh, it's been moved by Supervisor Getz, second by Supervisor Singer. To receive and file a report. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We're on item number 14. It is now 7:33 from personnel resolution to approve a successor labor agreement between Kenosha County and the Deputy Sheriff Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good evening, everybody. We have successfully negotiated a collective bargaining agreement. The Deputy Sheriff, Kenosha County. Interestingly enough, this is the last group, or the only group, with whom we will be negotiating going forward. They have agreed for 2-year extension of their current contract and involves no increase in wages. It does involve a change in their health insurance. They are currently enrolled in a high deductible plan. Which is different from the plan that most county employees are enrolled in. Correspondingly, they have reserved their right to have the county continue to pay their pension, which is part of Act 10, and a prohibited substitute bargain. Not prohibited substitute bargain, but rather their rights bargain or not. The two changes we'd like to give him are for new employees who would have to pay their pension under Act 10 and will also be enrolled in the high deductible plan. To offset some of the fiscal impact of that, we will offer 2 bonuses in the first year to new employees. The first has to pay past their 90-day probationary period, and the second when they achieve their 1-year probationary period. And so each new employee, currently I think we have 6, will receive $2,000 additional dollars. And I want to emphasize that isn't a bonus, it is not built to the wage for the first year of their employment. Respectfully request your approval on this. I hope you got an Obama sent out drafting. You did? No, it should have come PDF. It was mailed, I think, on Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah, mine. 2.1% per year is the impact on county government increase, and that is driven by the $2,000 bonus plus the increase in health.
They're not required to join the union.
That's the law.
Question, Mr. Chairman.
Good question.
In regards to the 2 time periods, so there's a 90-day bonus or appreciate that program, please.
New hires required both head retention and be enrolled in the high deductions plan. And so, there's across the board wage freeze, except for newly hired employees. You get two separate bonus payments of $1,000 to offset the effect of both high deductible health plan and pension payments. The first payment comes after 91 days of employment, mm-hmm. and that is selected because all benefits kick in on the 91st day.
Okay.
So health insurance comes in on the 91st day, so on and so forth. And then the second payment is after 1 year of every share of 7 months.
Thank you.
Just a question. The bonus also applies to 2013.
New hires of 2013.
Yeah, I'm just looking at your appendix A here that says wages, and it's got that breakdown. It's a bit confusing as to because it's not stated in next year's service plan.
Thank you. I'll clarify that question.
Move approval.
Second. Move by Supervisor Lewis, second by Supervisor Gantz. Any discussion?
Thank you.
Agenda item number 15 is 7:38 personnel discussion regarding electronic communication. As you are aware, there has been some use of our email by an employee. And there was some press, I will say, on that. The administration immediately sent out an email to everybody in the county reminding them of the policy and the administration discipline employed. As a result of some of the feedback and comments that I was hearing, I scheduled a meeting with the personnel director just to review really what had happened, what position that they were taking, and just to really have a look at our policies and understand whether they are appropriate, whether there are any changes that needed and what that needed to be made in light of this situation. So that was my intent, and Mr. Reed and the administration, along with Corporation Council, they've reviewed it. So with that, Mr. Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity. I will not retell the story of the employee who was cited for misusing the email system. I believe it was reported on in the paper. But it has generated a lot of questions as to why we allow our employees to use the email system, why our policies and our contracts allow our union employees to use the email system. And as an explanation to you this evening, I'd just like to kind of straighten that out for you, because it's possible you will hear in the future too some criticism of the county for allowing its employees to use the email system. I've distributed four documents to you. And I'll explain them to you, and then I'll connect all the dots as we go forward. Section 4.2 of the collective bargaining agreement is the section under which the 990 clerical unit, and that is the specific unit that was involved in the issue from November, is allowed to use the email system. Page 3 of the uniform work rules, the second document you have there, is the work rule which limits the use of the email system. The county's electronic communication policy is also attached. And I've also attached an outline from a presentation that we attended, Diane and I, and Corporation Council, that was given by Michael Best. Now, Michael Best has been a consulting law firm for the county on a number of issues. In this case, they gave a presentation on what the world looks like post Act 10. And I will draw some information from that and chose to give you the entire document. State and federal law states very clearly that employees have the right to engage in what's called protected concerted activity. A concerted activity for our purposes is an action by workers designed to better their wages, hours, and working conditions. And that should resonate with you because that is what we have to negotiate on the 111-70. And by and large, such activities are protected not just by state law, but by the National Labor Relations Act and State Labor Relations Act. And it's not limited to email. Email is just the instant case of that needs clarification, but our contracts allow our employees to attend grievances during work hours, to negotiate contracts under certain circumstances, some during work hours, some not, to train under certain circumstances, to attend union conferences. And so all of this kind of falls into the permissiveness that is driven by the considered activity laws. So even after Act 10 was passed, and that significantly stripped the unions of a lot of their negotiating power, we still cannot interfere with employees' rights to organize and promote activities of organization, of their organization. And so, in those kind of laws by contract, and you see that under Section 4.2, that its employees can use the email system to promote union activities, and it's because of those protections of concerted activity. Our uniform work rules and the electronic communications policy also limits the use of the email system, but within the confines of the state and federal laws of its presence. Let's talk about specifically the use of electronics communication, email specifically. The Kenosha County electronics communication policy is what is called an occasional use policy. We acknowledge that our employees will, on occasion, use the electronics communication, telephone, email, et cetera, for non-county business. In some ways, for county employees, somebody calls you up on a county phone, you have to return a call, et cetera, et cetera. Because of that, we allow electronic communication for the discussion of union matters and other protected concerted activity. And if you look on page 4 of the document that comes from Michael Best, you will see how that's clarified. When Supervisor Clark brought up the opportunity for you to hear this presentation and then think about if we need to make some changes to some policies, the one change you could probably contemplate, although not recommended by my office, is a business use only policy. Business use only policies limit all communication to business use only. They're very hard to manage, and it limits things that we get routinely on a daily basis that we would have to work to try and keep out, and more importantly, try and keep our employees from communicating back. We receive emails. Just last week, I received two emails from charities, community organizations, Chamber of Commerce, CADA, Lights and Street. We get invitations to fundraisers, we get business opportunities, I get a lot of email offering services, payroll, and human resources. And so we would have to find a way to manage that and keep that out through cost. If we start to allow those in during a business use policy only situation, the union can then make a claim to say, we're letting them in, you need to let us in. So, a good example of how all this comes together in a real life situation is the UW Hospitals and Clinic Arbitration, which is also part of that document. In general, our laws favor less limitations rather than more. And so the answer to the question on effective policy is that, yes, our policies are living within the limits of the law. We still hold the ability to limit the use of concerted activity or union business when someone crosses the line to take appropriate action like you did in the government. That's my presentation. Hopefully you have some questions. If you do, I'd be happy to answer.
Supervisor Singh.
Yeah. Is this just about emails or is it all about all electronic communications?
Electronic communication is covered in policy. You'll find it covered.
How do we manage employee usage of the internet, buying things on the internet, spending time on websites and that kind of stuff?
You'll see that in the electronic policy. If someone hits the internet to check a score, I'd ever do that. Check a score. Meet a tradesman.
Who knows?
Oh, you know? Important. I mean, we understand that's going to happen on occasion. Many of our employees go on the internet during their lunch hour. If there are anyone, I don't know, checking this. Telephones, they're, you know, are probably the longest and most enduring example of electronic policies and why they're needed.
But most employees nowadays have their own cell phones. They want personal phone calls. They make a phone.
And we
don't have any control over that, right?
No.
Other than the fact that it's company time.
If you have a smartphone, this is an old man's perhaps smartphone. You could check the score on your smartphone, which would be advisable. Mm-hmm. It would be smart. And certainly it's up to the supervisors and managers to design their employees, know what they're doing, and be aware of sending off into internet lines and being on the phone too much to do with that. Again, as I said, we have an occasional use policy because it's so hard to limit any use at all. And frankly, it's a pressure.
There have been several public records requests. I keep getting them dropped off in my office. Not the request, but the actual documents.
Okay.
And in the first batch of emails, there was an employee that responded to an offer where they needed money, which got the employee in trouble. But another employee offered, was it money? Pay for something. But in the second batch, and I don't think I've seen a third batch, but in the second batch of emails, what I at least discovered is, number one, we had Nick from AFSCME request to use the county email system. Is that a fair statement?
I believe you did.
Okay. To make emails to the union membership or the union leadership, union membership. And part of that email, or part of those emails, related to coordinating protests to go to Madison. But my opinion, we have a difference of opinion, and there may be case law out there, but you talk, and you're saying that that's not a violation. We have this environment that I'm concerned with. I want to shut the door, but we have this environment where we're looking at, we're hanging our head on this protected, concerted activity. And you said it was for wages, hours, and working conditions. And I think we're stretching that. And I don't know if you found any other definition or any other case law there, but there were a lot of emails going around, and you had emails from multiple offices responding to that, not responding, saying, please don't send me politically charged emails or anything that on my thing, but you had multiple communications, and while I'm not, in my opinion, I think it's a stretch that we're dealing with wages, hours, and working conditions. My opinion is I think there's more violations that are out there. But that happened prior to this incident. And the point that I walked away from the meeting with Mr. Riedel is they put the notice out there and it stopped it. And the discipline caused a change in action, not only for that employee, but for the rest of the county. So hopefully this situation is being monitored. I believe you said IT was monitoring it now.
Well, yeah, I have requested a couple of times just to make sure. Again, it's the definition of what is and isn't in the business that I believe if everybody took a look at those things, we could have a spirited debate. What changed, I think, is counting by email that was sent in November 18th, something 60, which more clearly defined what we believe is
Social Security numbers were intended for one thing, and it's evolved through the years to be used for everything, and now we're spending money redacting Social Security numbers. And a policy was put in place, or the intent was, you're going to use our email systems to coordinate your union meetings and stuff like that. Now it's stretched to, we're coordinating protests, and we're burying it under this hatch of concerted activity, which I find very troubling, and I think the public will find very troubling. And it's disappointing to me that the administration became aware of the communication and authorized it. Anything else? Thank you. Item number 16, it is now 7:52, audit of bills. Do you have that? Everybody signed the document?
You got it now?
Yes.
Item number 17, report from the finance director slash budget manager slash personnel director. Do you have any reports?
I have a general fund report.
What's the
spot? Really, not much of a significant change, a little change here.
What are we projecting?
We're projecting going from 7.7 to 8.1. And the significant change here is a change in the increase in delinquent properties. Now it looks like it's going to be a minimal change, just a small increase in about 25,000. Is a major really impact on what we're doing and what we had for the impact on the amount of
So it's an improvement from our last report.
Right. What is that? Yeah.
The last report that I was going to say today, I looked at that when we just had a half a million people from the health insurance reserve fund.
And there will be a copy of that.
But I will send out for
is there anything else to report?